What's up, everybody? Welcome to a brand new episode of Part of the Problem. I'm Dave Smith. He's Robbie the Fire Bernstein. Apologies, I'm not at home. I'm away from the studio on a little family vacation here, which is nice. We've had both my daughter and my son have nasty viruses over the last couple of weeks, and which is not what you plan on starting the summer with. So anyway, we've been dealing with that, but got the family out here today. And so, you know, stuff like that is nice. It's important, Rob. Got to do stuff like this with your family. And yeah, but anyway, so not in the studio, but we still will bring you an episode. Can I tell you this, Rob?
Please.
This house that I'm at, this is like the third year in a row that I've gotten this house. Like, we rent this house on the same week. It's like the way these things work. You get in on your week, on your time, on your house. I like the house. It's a nice house. Okay. So it's like the same time we've been back here. And tell me this about, this is a nice little, like, questioning yourself of how much of, like, a shitty person you are. So the room that I'm in right now, you know, 3 years ago I recorded podcast with you from here. 2 years ago I recorded podcast from you. And then here we are again. 3 years ago, I broke the blinds. I broke them. I was trying to get them open, yanked them too hard, snapped the thing. They never said nothing about it, never did. I don't think they noticed. It's 3 years later, blinds are still broken. And now I'm just getting furious at them. Like, it's like, how do you not, what are you not doing your job? Like, do you not check on your rental property at all? Do you not know, like, I'm coming in here, I got the last guy broke the blinds, and now I got to live with the last guy's mess? Like, it's an unbelievable thing where, like, I am, if you like compartmentalize part of your life, like if you just cut this sliver out away from that, I have a legitimate complaint. But when you add in the past action, it's really, I mean, it's poetic justice. I deserve to be dealing with these broken blinds. But it's amazing how quickly in your mind you go to, like, yeah, but I'm cutting that part out. They have no way of knowing that. So leave that information out and go, yeah, I paid you good money for this place. Fix your goddamn blinds.
I'll take the other side of this, my friend. That's a normal wear and tear on a rental unit. I don't know you to be an incredibly strong individual that I think you were maliciously trying to break blinds. And years later, you know, they should be taking care of these units. You're renting it. That's on them.
I swear you're turning me into an anti-Semite in real time. Like, in real time, as you say that, I'm going, no, there just aren't any good ones. Like, there aren't any good. You think Rob's one of the good ones, and then it's just in him. He's like, I would write a letter, a strongly worded letter about the blinds. Yeah,
well,
anyway.
I did
break them, and they have been here for 3 straight years. Listen, it's not – I'm not completely crazy to say, like, someone should have noticed that. That is kind of an issue. You should be checking on your rental property. You should make sure that nothing's been broken.
Or it's a three-year running...
I'm also more wrong for breaking them.
I feel like it's a three-year running gag of that's always been broken, and they like to get every guest thinking that they broke the blinds. Maybe the one guy that actually calls them to go, hey, sorry, I broke the blinds. They got a big prize for.
Dude, imagine... Now, listen, I'm going to say this. All the blinds match. They're all identical. And this is likely not the case. But just imagine... Whoever the owner of this house is the pettiest human being in the history of the world, and he knows that I broke the blinds. He brings back in that one broken blind every week. Just to go, hey, we're all living in a world where we pretend nobody broke these blinds, right? So here, all right.
I would love it if it's true. And you know, you probably shouldn't have said all this out loud on a podcast.
That's true. Rob, we are just asking questions on this show. That's what we're known for on this show. We just ask questions. We don't claim to have theory of any kind.
If it makes you feel any better, I'm out in Myrtle Beach for 2 more days. Fantastic fantastic run of porches. And I'm staying at the Marriott Mildew, where I showed up and it was so horrifying. I actually had to go back to the desk and they're like, sorry, we're totally sold out. And it was already 3 a.m. So I was like, all right, I guess we're sleeping in this room for tonight. And then the next morning they got me a new room.
It was that bad that you had to like be like, no,
yeah.
I can't.
Yeah, and it was.
Yeah,
it was
rough. Like
it was literally. I got back to the hotel at 2:30 in the morning, hadn't checked in. You know that. What am I gonna do? And then they gave me a new unit directly above that other room with the exact same problem. And I was like, all right, I guess this is my life for 2 days. But I'm getting them back because I got the AC on 60 and the window open. So you know it's gonna be their electric bill. No, because I'm trying not to smell the mildew or sit in a 100-degree room.
Jeez. That's all right. Well, that sucks. I'm glad the shows are good, at least. That at least makes the trip
somewhat worth it. And I got more of them coming at you. Firstly, I'm opening up for you in Houston, Texas this weekend. Then I got my own porch tour in Galveston, Texas on Sunday. And then you and I have the Nashville weekend along with that other random town where I think Nass is at. And then Lebanon, Tennessee, Chickamauga, Georgia, Atlanta, Georgia, Sandpoint, and Seattle, Washington, and more coming at you. So I'm getting busy.
We got, that's right. Houston is June 9th, 10th, and 11th, by the way.
Oh, yeah.
Not this weekend. We got a couple weeks for that. But June 9th through 11th, yep, that's Houston. And then it's Huntsville, Alabama, the Levity Live out there. And then we're doing the Zanies in Nashville. Comic Dave Smith for all those tickets. And then Porch Tour for all Rob shows. PorchTour.com, excuse me, for all of Rob's, for all of Rob's gigs. Yeah, looking forward to all of this. Kind of, we've still got a lot of fun gigs left on the calendar for this year. All right, let's get into some stuff. So, where are we here, Rob? Well, the war's back on, kind of. I don't think really. But, of course, as Donald Trump himself had described, right? What did he say at one point? He was like, well, it's a Middle East ceasefire. And Middle East ceasefires means there's less firing than during non-ceasefire times. You know, I read the other day, I can't remember if I'm getting, like, it doesn't matter, essentially, but I can't remember the exact detail of the statistic that I read the other day, that it was something where, I can't remember if it was the number of civilians or the total number of dead or something like that, but there's been more, Israel has killed more Palestinians in Gaza since the ceasefire than were killed on October 7th. So since the end of the war, you know, since the end of the genocide, the end of the destruction, whatever you want to call it, since then, they've killed more people than Hamas killed on October 7th. So it's like, it's still, so anyway, I guess just the point of that being that the event that is horrific enough to justify all of this, worse than that, we can call a ceasefire. We can say that's not, you know what I mean? Like that's peace times. And look, I mean, the ceasefire with Iran has been no different. I don't know exactly what to say. I'd say right now at this point, we're really, really in a fascinating moment right now, a very fascinating little moment right now, where a lot of kind of like a really big bluff is being called, in a sense, not just the bluff of the U.S. military might itself, but the bluff of, in a lot of ways, the U.S.-Israeli relationship. It really does seem to me, Rob, give me your thoughts, but it really does seem to me that when Donald Trump is saying now that the global economy was going to tank and we have to get this straight open and the economic pressures we're dealing with, I think that's him. I think that's right. I think that's essentially him telling the truth / admitting on some level, you know, the defeat of the whole thing. But if we're really looking down the barrel at like impending doom, if we continue this thing, then you, no matter what Israel has over you, it's up against impending doom. And so, okay, that means we might find out, like theoretically, we might find out what do they have, if they have anything, what are the levers of power that they can, you know, like, and so we're going to find that out in real time. Are they able to draw us back into this war, or are they not able to do that? Are we able to check them a little bit, or are we not able? We're like right about to find these things out. And in this moment, it's, I don't know. We're going to see, you know what I'm saying? Like, we're going to find out. Does Donald Trump go this way or that way? But as of right now, you look at the state of the thing. We are blatantly violating the memorandum of understanding. Donald Trump, it's a very strange dynamic where Donald Trump essentially signed a surrender document, is trying to spin it as a victory document, but then is openly, you know, Rob, I mean, I don't know if you've seen, right, like, I'm sure you've been reading the news a bit over this weekend. He's out here making claims that they, essentially, he's threatening them, which is already violating the memorandum of understanding. He's saying that it doesn't matter. He's essentially saying our signature doesn't mean anything. We can go back to destroying them tomorrow if we want to. That already is violating the memorandum of understanding by saying that. He's claiming that they're violating it by talking about charging tolls into the future of the Strait. But Rob, we can see the thing that you put your signature to. Donald Trump is claiming that they're violating the memorandum by claiming that after the 60 days they can put tolls in there. But I'm sorry, no, that's what the thing says. The thing only restricts them having tolls for 60 days. So I don't know. You've got this thing, you're violating it, but you obviously don't want to go back to war. So that's where we are.
All right. I got a slightly different read here, but I do want to preface this with, at this point, I have no idea what the hell is going on. It's been 3 months of constantly trying to figure it out. And I would say this is when my little snow globe of the way I usually analyze these things is completely shooken up, and I don't know. But all right, someone needs to finally admit they lost. Iran's not doing it. Donald Trump can do it, but that means that Iran is likely tolling or doing fees of the Strait. We'll be able to sell its oil, and we'll be allowed to enrich uranium, but probably has to make some sort of a pledge that they're not getting the bomb. Donald Trump signs an MOU that basically grants Iran all of the things that says, yes, America lost. Iran, you can have all these things that you said you need for us having had this war with you. Donald Trump, though, then turns around and undermines everything in the deal, says, I'm not actually sending you guys money. I will spend your money for you to buy American farm goods and American medical equipment, and I will send it over there. Goes, oh, clearly they're never getting a bomb. I never would have made a deal if they're getting a bomb. So it's clear that that's true. Then, on a big one, Iran walks away from the deal thinking that in 2 months they're going to start charging fees from the Strait. We're going to work with Oman. We're going to work this out. And then boats are just going through, and Iran goes, hey guys, we control the Straits. You have to coordinate with us. The boats don't coordinate with them. So then Iran strikes a boat. I think Donald Trump was trying to sneaky there and just be like, look, we just reopened the Straits and just basically have the Straits open. I see one of two things happening here. Actually, three. I'll just lay out the three possibilities. Either Trump was just once again trying to push for a victory and trying to walk back all of the clauses in the agreement he just signed and hoping that Iran would go with it. And once again, he realizes he doesn't want war. And so he's actually going to stick with the framework of the MOU and give Iran what they want. I don't really think he's looking to do that, though. I think maybe what he was looking to do is to rig the oil markets, get some oil through, and whatever he was seeing on how much they've drawn down stock, maybe enough oil got through that's not as much of a problem, or he's going to find the next thing that he can do to convince people not to be bidding up the price of oil so that he doesn't have his major problem of prices going up or a stock market crash. Or the last and most chaotic option is it's starting to feel a little bit like when you're dealing with an angry divorced wife and you finally say, hey, you can take the house. And I'm wondering if he's trying to make such a mess out of this situation that people are like, can you just bomb the shit out of them already? I've had enough of this. We don't care about their humanity. Just level the whole country. There's something about the way he's operating with the MOU that he seems to be trying to undermine it, weasel his way out of it. And I don't think the Iranians are going to stand by it. And I don't think Donald Trump is actually... It just doesn't seem to me, unless maybe this was one last shot at a victory of signing the MOU and seeing if you could trick the Iranians into not actually taking any of the things you agreed to. But it seems like Donald Trump, since he signed that thing, has just done everything he can to be like, that's not actually what I meant.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think, you know, my read on it is that what you're watching is Donald Trump grapple with the politics of this decision. It's rough. It's a tough one. You know,
so
it's
he's really trying to just tough. Delay the reality settling in. And
yeah, yeah, I mean, like, not admit not admit how bad. I mean, look, dude, they wouldn't release it for days before they signed the thing. And we're out there saying, don't believe any of this hype about what's in it. It was exactly right. I mean, like, again, maybe not exactly right, but if you go look at like what had been leaked, it was basically the memorandum of understanding with maybe like one or two minor adjustments. But all of the big things were the things that they were saying aren't actually in it. Like all of that was in, you know, I look at it like this, dude. There's basically been, if you want to break this war down, there's been three phases of the war. There was the military, the initial military campaign. Then there was the blockade and the, you know, the competing blockades, the blockade and the blockade of the blockade. And then after that, there's been this memorandum of understanding. I mean, it looks to me like Donald Trump launched a war, got fucked up in that war. After a month of it, immediately went to like, no, we're pivoting to this other thing because we don't want to go tit for tat anymore with them. Now, again, when I say got fucked up, I mean, did more damage to them, but took enough that it was like, whoa, we're actually really getting touched here. We immediately pivot to this blockade of the blockade, the logic of which was just insane. And, you know, I had to be on public debates with people like Will Chamberlain, like literally 2 months ago, were on a debate on Piers Morgan's show. And he's explaining to me how this blockade of the blockade is going to bankrupt the country and lead to the collapse of this regime. His, if you remember, I teased him after the month was up. Now it's like 2 months. But his line was, I'll be shocked if the regime is still standing in another month. And then I said, well, when the regime is still standing in another month, you'll move the goalpost to something else and I'll still be sitting here saying the same thing, whatever. None of that, it didn't blockade. And I think Donald Trump blinked in this game of chicken. And so I think that what you're seeing is like, yeah, he's trying to still work around the edges and get whatever he can. And I think that will go on. Like, Rob, do you really think the Iranians are getting access to $300 billion? Is that really happening? I mean, I don't know. I mean, maybe. Is the U.S. going to come through on its promises after? We're going to have a brief 60-day window to try to negotiate some type of JCPOA part two. Rob, is that going to happen in 2 months when it took 2 years last time? Again, you know, seems unlikely. Possible, I suppose. But, you know, one of the things that's frustrating, man, is that the situation with Iran, and this has always been the case, right? Like, since I found Ron Paul in 2007 and got obsessed with libertarianism and politics and all this stuff. And it's, you know, whatever. It's almost 2027 now. So it's almost 20 years ago. And this has been a thing the whole time. The whole time I've been here, I've been in this libertarian, the non-interventionist, right-wing libertarian world. We've been opposing the war in Iran. It was 2001 when George W. Bush put them on the axis of evil, him and David Frum. So the whole time, the thing that's been so goddamn frustrating is that a deal is right there to be made. The deal is so obvious, like the entire time. You know, it's like, it's so obvious what they want, and it's so obvious what we want. It's so obvious what's in their country's interest, and it's so obvious what's in our country's interest. You know, if you think about, I know Horton, you know, talks about this a lot, as usual, he's right. But when you go, dude, the whole nuclear threshold state business is a deterrent to not attack. It's like, wait a minute, so you're saying you really want us to not attack you, and we really want you to not make nuclear weapons. The deal's right there, Rob, right? I mean, isn't it a non-aggression pact in exchange for a promise to not make nuclear weapons? I mean, like the deal. And even here, you have a situation where like Donald Trump is like, okay, I really need this Strait of Hormuz to be open. Okay. And the Iranians really need what? Sanctions relief, non-aggression guarantees, like, all, you know what I mean? Like it's very clearly that's in their interest and very clearly it's in our interest to have, but the problem is what the problem's always been, you know, it's that you got this fucking goddamn Israel and their lobby and their, and you know, people can try to divert attention from it. But I'm sorry, it is the entire reason we're in this conflict at all. There's just nothing else about this. You know, there's Iran has been, I think since 1979, certainly vocally, I think from the beginning, they've been the loudest supporters of the Palestinians and condemners of the Israelis. And, you know, this is there's a pretty clear reason why they have beef, right? And there's a pretty clear, the relationship between Hezbollah and Iran is a very close relationship. Hezbollah is the fighting force that grew up out of the Israeli occupation of southern Lebanon, the ones who beat the Israelis' ass and drove them out of the country twice. Okay, I understand why those countries have a beef. Why do we have a beef with Iran, Rob? Like, what's the fundamental reason here? There isn't anything. Not like we you know, the truth is, Rob, and I'm sure you know this, right? But if just left at all to market, you know, incentives, if the market was left to its own devices, come on, man, we got a bunch of businessmen in here who'd love to go shake hands and sign contracts with a bunch of those Shiites over there in Iran and do all types of multi-billion dollar deals to refine their oil out of the ground for them and all this. You know what I'm saying? So, like, there's just no reason why we couldn't just all be friends. Anyway, look, if, again, as I said at the beginning here, that's kind of one of the things that's cool about this moment that we're entering into now. We're going to find out some of this stuff. Like, if I'm right about what I'm saying, like what I suspect that, you know, where Donald Trump is at. Well, if that's the case, then he's really going to have to stand up to Israel on this one. And I'm not sure, again, Rob, me and you have kind of, we've talked about this a lot on the show. And I think we're one of the shows in out here in the world of the internet that doesn't, I think we're kind of honest about when we're speculating versus when we, you know, have more authority to know something. Everybody kind of speculates over how the Israel lobby and how they're so effective at what they do in exerting influence over U.S. politics. But we don't actually know that it's like the craziest conspiracy. You know what I'm saying, Rob? Like, we don't actually know that it's like whatever your mind goes to is like the craziest way that Mossad controls the U.S. We don't know exactly what it is. We know some of it. I'm saying it's quite possible that it's not the worst version of that conspiracy. And that actually, Rob, when it comes down to it, if the goddamn president of the United States of America, the commander-in-chief of the U.S. empire, if he says, this is going to tank the global economy, done, we're not doing it, it's possible Netanyahu has to listen. That, you know, like, it is possible. A lot of things are changing right now. And this is, I mean, it's a big moment. Like I said when I was interviewing Ryan Grimm, there's something about this war, it feels like watching the Berlin Wall fall. You're like, whoa, things are changing. Things are realigning. And that is what happened in the 20th century, right? Like, with the exception of the United States of America, the most powerful country in the history of the world was the Soviet Union. Debatably, at least. And it collapsed. I'm not saying America's about to collapse, but the idea that the U.S.-Israeli relationship just has to be what it is, always, forever, is not true. And we should, you know, kind of be aware of the fact that, you know, to some degree, politics might be a lagging indicator in with a lot of these cultural shifts. And, you know, the fact that, like, say, public opinion on Israel has collapsed by 50 points over the last 3 years. All right, well, like, that might at some point have an influence on something. Maybe not. It doesn't seem to have had much of an influence so far, but it might. And yeah, I don't know. I really don't know. And then I'll say, on the other side of it, if I'm getting this all wrong, and Donald Trump, you know, we could be in a week back in a major war, and then I'd have to go, well, okay, I guess that's not the case. I guess he was willing to go that route with it. We'll see, Rob.
The one thing that really just doesn't make sense to me is if, and there's a bunch of ifs here, but if the administration really thinks that their nuclear capabilities are nearly non-existent at the moment because of our previous bombing campaigns and that they don't even have access to their centrifuges, and if they also think that they would have the ability to re-bomb in the event that Iran were to try and to go back to, like, if that's actually a targeted thing that can be hit, and I don't really know nuclear bunkers or whatever they can do to, I guess, do that deep enough underground that America wouldn't know about it, but I would almost think just walk away without the deal then. Like, this deal is clearly a bad deal. If the straits are going to be open and told anyways, just leave. Like, unless you actually think you're going to get to a JCPOA type arrangement, if you now give them $300 billion, all of their money back, and let them toll the straits. But, like, if you're gambling on even getting that, so then just leave.
Yeah, no, I this is what Jeffrey Sachs was arguing for a while, was just walk away. Don't make a deal. And there's a really strong argument to that. And part of it is that we really, for U.S. national interests, like whatever that even means, I know that's the term they like to use, but for like the American people, broadly speaking, we don't need a deal. We need to be out of this war. And if you walk away, even absent a deal, that's going to immediately put pressure on Iran to open the strait.
It just means they're going to toll. Everyone's going to have to pay a toll, but yeah, that's going to be the system in 2 months anyways.
Right. That's what you're agreeing to with this anyway. So you're kind of in a similar spot there. You don't have to worry about the fund, do whatever you want to do with sanctions or whatever. But yeah, you wouldn't have to worry about that. The thing is that what Donald Trump, I think, wants, and, again, take this with a grain of salt, because, like, it was reported that he had said a few weeks ago, there's, like, just get any deal and I'll sell it. Just whatever the deal. If I have a deal, then I can go out and say, hey, I made a really brilliant, wonderful deal. Doesn't matter what the deal is. And that does, to me, kind of sound like something Trump might think or say. But if I think at least, like, theoretically, if you throw enough money at him, maybe you would get some type of concessions, like them diluting their enriched uranium, or like them doing something, that doesn't really cost them that much anyway to do. But and if he were to get something like that, then perhaps that would be something he could sell as a victory. So it's really only for reasons of politics that we're even, like that you even have to have a deal at the end of this. That being said, politics is reality, and if that's what's going to end the war, I'll take a deal over the war continuing, if that makes sense. But I agree with you. The walk away option is still probably the best thing America could do here. Honestly, in terms of, like, I don't really think the Iranians need America to back or guarantor some fund of Arab Gulf countries or something like that. It's like, remove sanctions and business will take care of what business does. And,
That money, I don't think that money's going to them unless we're actually funneling it through those other countries to get it there.
Oh, yeah. No, for sure. They're not getting it directly from us. Well, that's right. Because, not that it even matters, but just because Donald Trump can't take that public of an obvious L. So he's got to, whatever. It's just, I will say, though, I do, which I think, I guess we're going to, pivot to now, is that that whole dynamic of what you're getting at there, of where, like, Donald Trump, is trying to, they're trying to walk this line between blasting Obama for giving them money, but then saying now it's okay because it's not U.S. taxpayer money, even though when Obama did it, it also wasn't U.S. taxpayer money, but now it's really okay because also this, the argument is that, like, also this time it comes with, like, conditions and they're not getting the money unless they do all of these things. And it's like, yeah, but you haven't even laid out what the things are. There are what things? What is it that Iran is obligated to do under the Memorandum of Understanding? Enter into nuclear discussions for 60 days? That's all they've committed to. They haven't committed to doing anything. And it's already, Donald Trump's already walking back on the nuclear dust. He's already walking back on the on enrichment, at low level enrichment. So like, it's not even, so anyway, my point being this, Rob, what's it? This puppy don't fly. I don't know how else to say it. It's just like, whatever you're doing here, there's gotta be, I'm sure there's gotta be like a term for it in like marketing, like some advertising agency or something, where there's just like, at a certain point, you just have to pull the plug on an idea. Like, this just isn't going to sell. This is not going to sell.
Bud Light with trans people.
There you go. This is, I'm sure it's great that the Trump administration hired a PR lady from Williamsburg, but no, she does not have her finger on the pulse of the Bud Light drinking community. And I mean, I just don't know what to say. This is just, it's too, look, it's not often you get to say this about our fellow Americans, but this is too dumb for them. They are not dumb enough to fall for this. And I got to say, I think that has been one of the major themes of the week, is that, because we're going to pivot into talking about J.D. Vance a little bit here. This is like, it's just an impossible situation that they're in, trying to sell this as like, yeah, we did a thing and this is what it ended in. And great. It's so, now it's okay to give Iranians billions of dollars. It's too absurd. And of course, more than anyone else, J.D. Vance has been tasked with this responsibility of selling. I mean, it's like, I don't even know. Imagine someone told you, Rob, you have to fight 7 John Joneses, just 7 of them. First you, one-on-one, and you're like, dude, I mean, one of them is an impossible task. So there's just no chance. And I don't know, that's just what it feels like, sending J.D. Vance out to go defend this stuff. I think I said this on the show last week. It reminds me of Joe Biden sending Kamala Harris to the border. Like, it's just hanging your guy out to dry. There is no lane here. There's no lane. There's no lane to be the kind of, like, the critic of Israel and the Israel lobby and forever wars while defending the war in Iran. What lane is that, Rob? Defending the war that only the Israel lobby wanted while attacking the Israel lobby because they're doing precisely what all of us who are against the war told you they would do. So all of us who sat here and said, Israel is dragging America into a needless, costly war. We sat here, you guys smeared all of us, said, screw you, we're with the Israel lobby that's dragging us into war. Then you got dragged into the war. The war's a disaster. Now you're trying to get out of the war, and you're going, hey, guys, these jokers are trying to drag us back into this thing. Yeah, no kidding. I don't know, Rob. It just, this, man, this is what we kind of knew from the beginning, that this is going to be, I'm glad he's doing it. I'm glad they're doing it. But man, this is painful. This is a painful L for this administration to take.
Well, I'm not going to argue on that.
All right, let's play. So J.D. Vance went on Bill Maher's show.
Yeah. For having the impossible task, and even though I didn't agree with a lot of what he was saying, and it might just be that Bill Maher is so stupid, he actually had a guest that knows what he's talking about and just says something, and Bill Maher's like, oh, well, I'm just walking the middle over here. But at least J.D. Vance, I didn't agree with him, but he held his own from a political standpoint and came across well.
He's good at this. This is one of the things J.D. Vance is good at, like Bill Maher-type shows. CNN type shows. He's good at that. I think there's a lot of little things that allow that to be the case. You know, Rob, like in the same way that I know I've made a big deal about saying this about Dan Bongino. And I know, oh, he was talking shit because I know it hurt us. I said it on Tucker's show and I know I knew it would get to him. It bugged him. But I said that I was like, well, you know, forget me. It's like, I'm not saying like Dan Bongino's a coward because he won't come debate me or something like that. I'm saying like he's the rest of his life, he's sentenced to being a coward of everyone. Like Dan Bongino can never do a contentious interview. He can never do a debate. He could debate, but it would have to be like someone to the left of him or to the more establishment than him. He's got to be in it because you're only like one question away from his entire thing falling apart. like, hey, what's up with the 180 you did on Epstein? You were saying this, then you said this. What'd you see? You know, it's very easy to turn. But you said you can guarantee he killed himself. Oh, the files are declassified. Where's the evidence? You know, he's got no. And in a similar way, I think J.D. Vance can do well on Bill Maher. I don't think he can ever do well with, you know, this is a very big world that you're cutting out now, where he went on Theo Vaughn's show, but even Theo Vaughn brought up Gaza a lot and made him kind of uncomfortable and pushed him into a kind of uncomfortable area. There's all of the if you wanted to do Tim Dillon or Joe Rogan or Andrew Schultz or Theo Vaughn, or if you want to do any of those, J.D. Vance is going to have a much, much tougher time. He's in an environment here where Bill Maher, he's the host is a dedicated rabid Zionist who was on board with this war and recognizes that kind of didn't work out. We should probably end it now. So that is about the friendliest environment that J.D. Vance could have, if you ask me to go do a show like this. So I, you know, anyway, let's play we got two clips from the show here. Let's play them. Natalie, make sure to, you know, do whatever we can do so they don't, because HBO messes with us for putting these up sometimes. But come on, man. Bill Maher, it's Bill Maher. I love Bill Maher. Bill Maher also had a huge impact on me. I always do kind of admire the guy for that. But, man, he is a liberal, and it is difficult to swallow at times. Anyway, here, let's get into the first clip.
Can you tell me you will do that? Will you bring us back to the middle, at least on that, where we concede elections, where it's not either one of those two options?
Okay, Bill, so this is where I'm probably going to lose you here, but here's...
That happened about 8 minutes ago.
Look, I don't think that we should not concede elections, but I don't think that's what's going on. I think that if you go back to the president's core argument, he was making an argument about problems that existed in 2020. And here's the problem that I'm most focused on. The president and I have talked a lot about this, and I think we share a perspective here, but set to the side the stuff that really gets you and your audience very angry about whether the count was legitimate in Georgia or Pennsylvania or any of these other states. Is it true that large technology companies, some of whom have financial interests that exist outside the United States of America, were they censoring information in the run-up to an election? And set to the side the stuff, again, the Georgia stuff, no. But that was
litigated. Dominion, the Fox News paid us.
Well, I'm trying to make the more middle ground argument here. The biggest criticism I had of the 2020 election is that you had technology companies that were quite literally censoring negative information about the left and promoting negative information about the right. So in a fundamental sense, like if the First Amendment says that we have a free and open debate and then the American people judge based on that free and open debate, the sense in which I think the election in 2020 was rigged, I'm sorry, is that you had technology companies that were putting their thumb on the scale in a way that completely obliterated the real open.
Let's pause it here for a second. This is, you know, Rob, first of all, it's just ridiculous that we're even talking about this. And the fact that Bill Maher even brings this up, this is what is so, it's so infuriating about liberals. And it is just like, it's there's no one else who's quite like this other than liberals. Like leftists aren't this way. It's a liberal thing where they like, listen, part of this is, you know, the fish doesn't know that it's in water type of deal. The Bill Maher is just, and I am not, again, we're not leftists here. So don't get the impression that I'm saying this as inherently negative. Bill Maher has been rich and famous forever. You know, I saw Bill Maher when I was 16 and was like, whoa, being a stand-up comedian who's talking about politics, that's a really cool thing to be. You know what I mean? I'm that now. I am that. I have a mortgage and children and not even babies anymore, like children who I have conversations with. He's been rich and famous this whole time, you know, the whole time. Rich. And there is just something. And look, we all have this to some degree, right? Because in a way, we're all rich. We all, like, there were kings who existed in human history who never had a hot shower in their life. You have luxury that the 1% of the 1% of the 1% for most of human history couldn't have dreamed of. You essentially have magic compared to how they lived lives. So we all, and we take that for granted, you know, like, and it becomes things where when you take a lot of what you have for granted, there's a tendency to lose perspective on things that irritate you and compare them to how big a deal they actually are. And look, I mean, this is a huge, huge component of why every institution in this country has had their credibility shattered, including just things like the New York Times and Meet the Press and CNN. Like, nobody trusts them, nobody watches them, reads them anymore. And it's because of shit like this. Like, it's like, oh, I'm sorry, Bill Maher. Did January 6th offend your sensibilities? Did Donald Trump denying the results of an election? Listen, the guy just led us into the most unpopular war in American history and lost. It's a global catastrophe, what he just did. You know what people in this country care about? They care about the fact that groceries are unaffordable. They cannot afford anymore to go grocery shopping. And they're putting necessities on credit cards. You're upset about the 2020 election? What the fuck are we even talking about? Of course, there's been a clip circulating today about what, you know, Bill Maher and Keith Olbermann denying the 2016 election, claiming Russia interfered and all that. So, you know, it's okay. So he's a hypocrite on top of it. But just like, honestly, like, who cares at this point? But then, and then I'm curious to get your thought on any of this, Rob. But then also, J.D. Vance is just like, this is the weakest. It, like, you guys are also kind of full of shit too, because it's like, what are you even talking about here, man? Now you're making a claim about tech censorship. It's like, okay, fine. That's a good argument to make, but that's a completely different claim than the claim that Donald Trump's been making for 6.5 years. He's been saying that, like, the election was stolen, that there were more votes in Georgia that should have gone to him. That he's been talking about voting machines and voter fraud and things like that. That's totally different than tech censorship. And honestly, the administration and J.D. Vance and Republicans and all of them would be in a much stronger position if they were just saying what J.D. Vance says now. Just make that the claim. You know, it's like, it's like a lot of the 9/11 truth stuff. And I know, but God, I'll get hate on this in the comment section, because I know I always get those because, Dave's still so stupid. He thinks Al-Qaeda did 9/11 or whatever. But it's like, there were so many real conspiracies and really, like, important pieces of information, important truths about 9/11 that all get completely blown away when you start saying it's just holograms and missiles and shit, and it's not planes or whatever. Then I guess it doesn't matter. You know, there's one of the points I think that Scott made on your podcast when he was talking about that, where he was like, it doesn't matter anymore that Muhammad Atta was radicalized by Naftali Bennett calling in these strikes in Lebanon and killing these little girls. That doesn't matter anymore if he was never even in the plane and there wasn't a plane and there was a controlled demolition and all that. Anyway, when Donald Trump starts making all these claims about voting machines, it's almost like you let the real scandal get away. And then J.D. Vance could be sitting here as me and you were for years going, yeah, okay, sure, there's no evidence that they actually, like, cheated, but here's all the ways that they rigged the whole system in the year of 2020. And then you have a really strong argument on your hands. But what you're doing now is you're doing this weasel thing where you're trying to weasel in the strong argument while not admitting that obviously your boss has been making a whole bunch of claims that are complete bullshit, and you're too much of a bitch to just say that, even though you know it. And we all know that you know it.
You can't keep your job and oppose Donald Trump. So that's why he's pulling this little pivot and going, I'm not going to address those things. But let me tell you, the election was in fact stolen because largely, I guess the biggest one is they censored the Hunter Biden laptop story. And I got to say, one of there's a lot to complain about Donald Trump about, but recently, you know, his tax thing was ridiculous. That his family's off for taxes, and that he managed to cut that they're not going to be audited, and he managed to cut a deal with his own government, with his personal lawyer, Todd Blanche, who's now the head of the AG, writing those carve-outs for the IRS, and that he was suing himself. That whole thing was ridiculous.
You got an issue with that?
The one thing I really liked about it was that there was one person in government saying, you know, the people on January 6th were done very dirty, and I think that they deserve compensation because of the corruption of the Biden administration. It was kind of funny that that was the red line for the Republicans, was not the agreement that was made, but that we can't be sending money. I mean, apparently there was like a behind closed doors screaming match, and that's one of the few times I've seen Donald Trump walk something back and go, all right, I didn't realize this was that important to you. But then he was on I saw him on some news show where he goes, I think that the FBI orchestrated that day. And I'm watching that and I'm like, well, if there's one person that I guess could get out there and prove that, it's you. And so on both the election storyline of an election being stolen, you were president at the time, you're president now. If we don't actually have honest elections in this country, where's the FBI department that is working that case right now and is going to prove it and is going to clean it up? If you actually think the Dominion machines are being run by the Democrats and are flipping votes, what are you doing about that right now? Why aren't you exposing that storyline? And on the January 6th one, if you think that the FBI actually works against the American people to pretend that there's threats of domestic terrorism and that they had agent provocateurs that opened up doors and, you know, didn't staff the day properly with security and manufactured an entire incident to undermine your presidency, that would be a really powerful story to educate people about how the deep state operates and how they're working against your interests. Why aren't you, like, it just gets to a line with Donald Trump that, you know, he's not just a podcaster. He can't, it's ridiculous when he just says, well, I believe, I think it happened, that's it. Well, you're the guy. You're the one person in the entire country that can actually take an agency, go research it, and actually prove the story. And the fact that you're not, you know, it just, either you're just lying or you don't actually care.
Yeah, no, that's right. I mean, look, dude, you're making, it's like everybody, the rhetoric on all sides has been dialed up so high over the last few years that it's just, but it's like, dude, you're claiming that the election was stolen. That is a fucking serious goddamn claim. You're claiming that the United States of America was stolen from its people. I mean, this is like and that we were essentially forced to have Joe Biden, who did not win the election, be president of the United States for 4 years and be a disaster, as you point out, and all of these things we had. Like, okay, so then you're telling me, and this is why, even it's like, if you follow the administration's own logic, the only conclusion is that you guys are all weak and useless. You know, you're saying that you came back into the presidency now, you, that the Democrats stole America. They stole overthrew the Constitution and you know, essentially had a coup in the United States of America. And now you are in the presidency with a Republican Congress and your own picked Supreme Court, and you're going to do nothing about it. Everyone who did that's going to get away with it. No one's being publicly executed. No one's going to jail for the rest of their life. But there was a coup in the United States of America. The victim was you, sir, the sitting president of the United States of America. And we're not going to follow up on that. I mean, that's the most ridiculous one, really. And we probably don't focus on that one as much because we've never really just been believers that the 2020 election was stolen. It was rigged in the way that J.D. Vance says. They ran essentially a color-coded revolution on us. Yes, they had riots in the streets and they stuffed ballots with write-in mail-in ballots. But again, this isn't a conspiracy. This was all done out in front of everybody. We all watched it together. It wasn't like the censorship regime wasn't a secret censorship regime. They booted people off in front of all of us. We all watched them. There was someone who got kicked off Twitter. Oh yeah, you, the president of the United States of America, got censored off of Twitter, right? So anyway, it's not, but you've been making this really wild claim for all these years. And now, yeah, now that you're in, you're doing nothing about it. That's the position that you're here to defend. It's just too weak. Everything from defending the war to just defending the administration's take on 2020. It's just all, I don't know, man. It's just too wrong. None of it's right. You're like, none of this is, it doesn't have the energy of like, oh yeah, they're, because it's just such bullshit.
I was very open to the election was stolen story. And the reason why was I watched all of these committee hearings of these guys testifying that they were working on like the counts, and then someone told them that it was free lunch and they walked outside and then got locked out and they'd like put up in it just like testimony. I watched a lot of them, and then like the election just, they just went certified, and then like that part never got reported on. And so I was like, there's clearly some goofiness going on here, but I kind of felt like Donald Trump was telling us all the way up to the election that the thing was going to be stolen. He didn't use his power and resources to prevent it. He didn't use his power and resources to then prove it. From what I understand, the court cases that they put together was never had substance to it. It was basically just to generate the news stories to give him some cover to claim the election was stolen. And now, after I've seen him lie through his teeth in the second administration, I'm more open to the idea that Donald Trump had absolutely nothing to go on when he was making those claims. But just to bring it home, I still stand by, you're the one guy. If you actually think that the FBI did the January 6 people dirty, please prove it. If you actually think an election was stolen and elections can be stolen, please prove it. That's how you can actually change and make our country better. You just getting on television and making claims, especially when it's in mixed up with claims like the straits will naturally reopen themselves. Oh, the Iranians completely defeated. They don't have a navy anymore. You know, you've just made too many claims that were completely ridiculous that you just 100% swear by, that I guess, you know, the storylines that I'm more interested in, such as we don't actually have a democracy and elections are stolen, or, hey, the feds did people dirty on the day, which I even believe to be true. But like the fact that Donald Trump's saying it is a meaningless statement.
Yeah. No, it's in some ways it's worse than not saying it. It's like, oh, so you know this and you're not doing anything about it. All right. Here, let's play the end of that little clip, see if there was anything else in there, and then go to the other one.
Exchange of ideas. Well, now, by the way, it didn't happen in 2024, but it happened in 2020, and it was a problem.
Well, you're going to get a big pat on the back when you go back to the White House. All right.
Okay, let's go to the other clip. Those, yeah, I guess we had gotten through.
You is fundamentally, it says the straits are going to be open, the oil is going to flow. We're seeing that happen already. It's also a ceasefire, which, as you pointed out, is always going to be a little messy when you're dealing with the Iranians. But if we make the final deal, then great. If we don't make the final deal, their nuclear program is still destroyed. They're still much weaker as a country. So my attitude is America wins either way. But I do think that what the president has done is asked us to do something that, frankly, nobody in 47 years of dealing with the Iranians has done, which is offer them an opportunity to fundamentally transform how they behave with the West. They've been the largest state sponsor of terrorism basically since they began as a nation, or at least as an Islamic Republic 47 years ago. He's saying, look, if they're willing to change, we're willing to change too. If they're not willing to change, we still fundamentally have all the cards, and I think that's a good place for us to be.
But their program isn't destroyed. Their nuclear program isn't destroyed. I mean, I don't know any of our objectives. And look, I said,
What part is not destroyed?
Well, we didn't get in there. The whole thing was we have to get in there and see. Otherwise, we wouldn't be doing this.
Well, let me say, first of all, so a nuclear program, and I'm hardly a nuclear scientist, I'm a lowly politician, but the thing that you have to destroy is their ability to enrich uranium, which has been destroyed. You have to destroy their ability. Well, because you need functioning centrifuges that can actually spin.
We got to get in there and we got to get the dust.
Okay.
And we didn't get in there, so how do we get the dust?
So that's actually a separate question. So there's the highly enriched stockpile, which, by the way, was allowed to accumulate over 20 years of previous administrations. That enriched stockpile is something that we want to get. But, Bill, if we never get it, and the president wants it, and we are going to get it, but if we never got it, it's buried deep underground and they don't have the ability to turn it into a nuclear weapon. So the program is functionally destroyed. We're just talking about, can we set them back even further through these negotiations?
I mean, what a load of bullshit. Just all of it. I mean, it's just pure lies. Pure lies. I mean, even for him to say that that stockpile of uranium was built up over the last 20 years. Well, no, that's not really true. And in fact, from everything we know, these are verified IAEA reports. No, it wasn't until Donald Trump tore up the JCPOA. In fact, it wasn't until a bit after Donald Trump tore up the JCPOA, and there were a couple of Israeli attacks before they started enriching up to 60%, which is what the whole thing was, this whole bullshit was always about from last summer to this summer. And no, to say the he's essentially trying to use the brag of the 12-day war to justify this war. It's, oh, we degraded their nuclear program and sent it back. Rob, you're trying to sell this is a good deal because, and what's the only win he can point to? The strait is open. And that's not even true. And whatever we get, it's, it certainly seems right now, Rob, that this was one of the things that was being reported out by the drop site guys. I do got to give them credit every opportunity I get. Jeremy Scahill and Ryan Grimm, man, they run a Real Deal news organization over there. And they were on that Iran is not backing down off charging a fee for the Strait of Hormuz. And this is the big fight that's going on right now. This is what their reporting has been saying from the very beginning, has been the position of the Iranian government. And this was kind of codified in the memorandum of understanding. I'm sorry, it's pretty heavily implied if you say you're not allowed to toll this strait for the next 60 days, that you are allowed to after that. Otherwise, you wouldn't specify that you can't do it for these 60. And to celebrate any victory about the Strait of Hormuz, like we had a Strait of Hormuz where it was open and Iran wasn't charging fees before you idiots launched this war. I'm sorry, man. It's like, I want to be in the position here where I'm defending them getting out of this catastrophe, but them lying doesn't really make that good of a defense. You know, Rob, I'd be willing to take one for the team, but it actually is a stronger argument for ending the thing to just tell the truth and admit that it was a huge, giant mistake. You know, like Donald Trump, rather than having J.D. Vance in some way, he'd be better off having somebody who could just tell the truth and wasn't scared of getting fired by Donald Trump. You know, like you'd just be like, oh, but if you didn't get anything, then why'd you launch the war? You'd be like, oh, yeah, that was idiotic. Trump listened to Netanyahu. What a dumb decision. Anyway, we got to get out of this now. Like, it's just, I think it's more effective to just say that.
I think if they were honest, we could let it go, because then that's actually cleansing. We get some truth of what were the bad mistakes that led us into this war and prevent them in the future. But if you're just going to go, yeah, we totally won, it was the greatest victory, we got the greatest deal, you're kind of just leaving the door open for Donald Trump to make the next giant huge mess and pretend like it's the greatest thing that ever happened to us.
Yeah, no, that's true. And that is a real concern too. And, you know,
doesn't matter what I do, they all love it.
Well, governments like this, you know, they're government always either screws you coming or going. And so there's like this thing where, you know, you have something like Venezuela and he thinks that's a big success. So then he goes, okay, now I want to go do Iran because I'm hot. But then you have Iran and he humiliates himself. And I got to say, I'm worried that his response to that will be, I got to go get a win. Let's go do Cuba. You know, Cuba can't, you know, do what Iran can do. They're not
closing. Does Cuba have a strait?
Nah, I don't think so. I don't think they got anything. I mean, I don't know, honestly, that much about the extent of what Cuba could, like, disrupt shipping patterns. But no, I don't think they don't have anything like, you know, the stockpile of missiles and drones that Iran has. And they're a tiny little poor country. And, you know, I mean, not that Iran is rich compared to us, but they are compared to Cuba.
Just don't fuck up Key West. I like that place.
Oh, yeah. You keep your hands off me and Rob's Key West. We love going down there. Sure, you can't sleep past 5:45 a.m. because there's a rooster crowing in your ear, but it is a fun town. All right. Any other thoughts on J.D. Vance's remarks here before we wrap this up, Rob? I mean, I guess I would just, you know, to crystallize like what I've been saying, there is, this is too blatant. It's too obvious of a loss. You know, I got to say, I've had this, as I started the podcast by saying, it's like a little bit of a weird moment right now. And I was talking, you know, I mean, I'm on vacation with the family or whatever. And so I'm out here, and I talked to Scott Horton on the phone this morning for a little bit. And I was talking to him, and he was like, I think he was supposed to go on Piers Morgan today, but then it got moved or something. And he told me that. And I was like, oh, you know, I haven't gone on Piers Morgan in a couple weeks. And I was, you know, I haven't done like a big debate in a while. And I almost didn't, like, as I was thinking about that, I was like, oh, but dude, I don't even, what are we even debating about at this point? What, you know, like, what are we even arguing? I'm going back. Like, I feel like if me and, what am I going to do? Like, I was telling you, like, I mean, it wasn't the last time. I guess it was a couple times ago, but I was on there with Will Chamberlain arguing to me that the Iranian regime was going to collapse in a month.
They're waiting for these guys to get new talking points so they can have you back on to argue with someone. I know it's they got nothing right now.
What, I'm supposed to come back and get into another debate and we're just going to pretend that like that last one didn't happen? Like it's just, can we just make these things like you just admit you're wrong? And then I don't know. It's just very, it's very bizarre. It's kind of surreal. It's like, look, man, all the people warning against this war, you know, I mean, Rob, think about it. I know this isn't the first time I'm saying this, probably won't be the last time. But if you think about the way they tried to drag everyone over the predictions that Tucker Carlson and John Mearsheimer made over the 12-day war that didn't come to fruition. And then they all happened in this war. It's like everybody who was warming. I don't know how many people used to mock me, Rob, for using the term escalation dominance so much. They used to go, yeah, yes, yes, we know Dave's position on Iran, latent nuclear deterrent, escalation dominance. Like, is that, because I would always talk about how we don't have escalation dominance over Iran. It's a major goddamn problem when you launch a war and you don't have escalation dominance. It means things can happen, like what we're living through. Anyway, the more meta thought about the J.D. Vance thing is just that this puppy don't fly, Rob. You can't sell this. You can't sell this as a victory. You accomplished nothing. This is, it's a fucking war, for God's sake. People die. The human beings are dead. Lives are ruined. Family members are going on without their loved ones right now. Thing cost, you know, the total cost of the thing is going to be in the hundreds of billions of dollars. What did we get for it? Nothing. You say their nuclear program is set back or something. Nothing. They never had a bomb. They weren't making a bomb. This is all bullshit. You launched a war. You lied through your teeth the entire time, and you lost. Good luck trying to spin this as a victory. And this is on the easiest environment to do it, on, you know, a somewhat psychotic Zionist show. Anyway, all right, that's it. For us, one more time, Rob, where's your next video?
Everyone, check out my podcast, the Run Your Mouth Podcast, and go over to porchstore.com. You can see a whole slew of dates, still adding more, but I already got all the dates up through August, so a lot of porches all over the country. Come hang out.
All right, sounds good. And, of course, comicdavesmith.com, Houston, Texas, our next stop. So comicdavesmith.com for all those tickets. All right, catch you next time. Peace.